everybody. Welcome to the New in Chess podcast, where we talk to grandmasters, authors, trainers, and other personalities from the fascinating world of chess. The New in Chess podcast is brought to you by DGT, the leading producer of chess clocks and sensory chess boards. My name is Dirk-Jan ten Keuzendam. We're recording today's podcast in Wagensee, where the Tata Steel Chess Tournament has entered its final phase, and both the Masters and the Challengers group will see exciting final rounds. My guest is Grandmaster Luc van Wely. Luc is a 8-time Dutch champion, who in his rich career has won tournaments all around the world and reached as high as 10th place in the world rankings. Luc has played in Wagensee countless times, but these days he's becoming more and more well known as a successful trainer and coach. And it's in this capacity that he is here for the 88th edition of this wonderful tournament. Luc is here as the coach of Dutch Grandmaster Max Warmerdam, who is playing in the Challengers. As we are recording this podcast, the final free day of the Tata Steel Tournament is in full swing. And with no games being played today, we look back on the first 10 rounds that lie behind us and the three crucial rounds that lie ahead of us. Luc, welcome back to the podcast. Today is a free day in Wagensee. How free will it be for you?
Yes, thank you, Dirk-Jan, for having me back. And yes, from Wagensee this time. And well, it's the last free day and still three more rounds to go. But the end is in sight, so... Yeah. But so actually, I feel kind of relieved, you know, that, well, you know, the ordeal is almost over.
You've already been here for 2 weeks now. Is that? But OK, you know the place, so you know how to deal with that. Or?
Yeah, well, if you look at my stats, I've been here as a player 26 times. Once I played in the B group, or so-called Challengers these days. 25 times in the Masters,
yeah,
and this is my fourth time as a coach of Max in Wagensee. So
yeah,
well, so I know what's going on here. It, for me, it's basically just like yeah. Movie Groundhog Day.
Yes. Did you calculate how many months exactly you've spent here, or?
Well, it should be at least 500 days.
Okay,
so
we're talking years.
Okay. Yeah, so if I'm not at home, if you want to find me, the most likely place is Wagensee.
Now
today has been a snowy day, and I think it's actually a nice day to go for a beach run.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, I'm kind of enjoying it. Well, also, you know, when the end is near, you know, you start to feel more relaxed, you know, it's because let's say in the beginning and you start off bad, you say, oh my goodness, it's going to be a long tournament, it's going to be a long suffering, and then I'm not even playing.
Maxi had a bit of a patchy start,
yeah.
and he recovered from that, but of course it's different if you're playing yourself. Then I mean, these will be the crucial days when the tension mounts and the result has to be cemented.
It is crucial if you still play for something.
Yeah, yeah.
Because let's say more than half of the field is not playing for anything. Playing for survival,
yeah.
And just to get home in one piece.
Yeah.
And you have the happy few. Who are still fighting for something, and that's kind of nice, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most of it, they're looking forward just to to finish the tournament standing.
Well, and do some damage control.
Yeah.
I mean, there's people who are losing points, and more than a little in some cases. So I think what we've seen so far in the tournament is a very uneven tournament. I mean, some players, they play great games and then the next day they play an idiotic game. We've seen many mistakes, many blunders. It is the youngest Masters in Wagensee, of all time, where we have Anish Giri as a 31-year-old veteran. How do you explain the unevenness of the tournament? Is there a connection with that age, or is it the time control that we should speak of? How do you explain it?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, this time control, it's, I don't know who invented this time control, but I think it's pretty ridiculous to have. I mean, back in the days, we had this time control with no increment, yeah? Mm. And then it was also kind of, you know, fun to watch this time scrambles, you know, when people had like, I know, for example, Jeroen Piquet was a typical time travel specialist or addict, whatever you call it. And then he had to make like 10 moves in 10 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
And so, which was maybe fun to watch, but for chess, I don't think it, I think the increment system is probably much better.
It was not invented for nothing.
I don't know why, I think Fischer came with this.
Yes.
It was his proposal.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly why he came up with this proposal, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Mm. But, you know, what I know is that with the 30 seconds increment, there is basically, in my opinion, no time travel. Mm. Let's say if you have 2600, 2700, you can play a very decent game with 30 seconds per move, even writing down. So I didn't see what was the need to change this time control.
I think there is a reason. I mean, they are doing it because the upcoming candidates tournament are going to have this time control, and there are several players here who are taking part in the candidates. So it was specifically for that reason, and maybe also to add some excitement. But maybe I should say what exactly the time control is. So you have 120. You have 2 hours for the first 40 moves, and no increment whatsoever. And then you have 30 minutes for the rest of the game. And from move 41 onwards, you have 30 seconds increment, which means that many games, apparently it is very difficult to use your time economically and to keep some time at the end of these 2 hours, because so many people, they end up in terrible time trouble.
Yeah. So let me say a few things, because first of all, you know, I think what I can say you shouldn't do this. Mm-hmm. First of all, you know, because your tournament has your own identity, and why would you care about the candidates?
Okay.
I mean, if you claim to be Wimbledon of chess, why would you care about the candidates of chess? I mean, you just you keep your position, and you don't want to be, let's say, a sort of training tournament for the candidates. I think it's pretty ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing is, I'm kind of, you know, more black and white guy. So either you increment or you don't. Mm-hmm. So let's say, for me, you can say, okay, let's do 2 or 3 hours for the whole game. No time control, you spend as much as you want, or you play with increment. And the last thing I want to say, okay, so they made this this new time control. It's now a question which players can adapt
mm-hmm.
the best to this new system, because it's like half-half.
Yeah.
And maybe, let's say, old guys like myself who kind of were there before, mm-hmm. so we maybe know a little bit still how it was, you know, to play without increment.
Yeah.
So maybe we can actually adapt easier mm-hmm. than let's say the young generation.
Yeah.
But okay, in general, I think it's also the question is, do you want to see good chess? Do you want to see exciting stuff?
Well, probably there's a split there. Some people they don't mind if pieces are flying and dramas are happening. Well, what surprises me, honestly, is that it's not that this is the first recent tournament where there's no increment, and that, let's say, not all players have learned their lessons from these other tournaments where we have seen that all these blunders happened and all these terrible time scrambles, they happened, like in Norway Chess last year. So why don't they draw lessons from that? Or why is that?
Yeah, so basically, but what you're basically trying to say is that chess players, they're not necessarily smart. So
that might be one conclusion.
Yeah, I think smart people actually kind of adjust to what's happening. They learn from their mistakes, you know, that's one thing. But okay, it is what it is. People, players have to adjust to this new time control. We can question why it's being done like this, but okay, it is what it is. You can see that a lot of mistakes have, you have seen many mistakes in more than usual, I would say.
Yeah, and also several players having these very uneven performances where one day they play brilliantly and the next day they are unrecognizable. But that could also be connected to another reason that I wanted to put forward is that, normally speaking, Waggensee was the first tournament of the year where people came well rested after having eaten too much over Christmas. And then it was the start of a new year, a fresh start. Also this whole idea that it's early January, the new year offers new chances. And now you can see that several of these players, they had an incredible schedule before they came here. They were traveling the whole world. I mean, there was the Global Chess League where you were as well. There was the World Blitz and Rapid in Doha. There was an event in South Africa. And some of them, they had jet lags that are pretty irresponsible.
Yes, that's, I have to say that, first of all, I think that it's not only that, let's say, they had many events in December, because you had South Africa, Global Chess League, and World Rapid and Blitz in Doha, but I think it's been simply the whole year. They had, some guys have been going the whole year without taking breaks. And at some point, you're going to pay the price for that.
Are you specifically speaking about the Indian players? Because they had very tough schedules. I think all of them, maybe except for Aravind, but...
Yeah, Indian players for sure. I also have to say it's kind of self-inflicted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that they were forced to do it. I mean, that I think it's not a very smart thing to do. At some point, maybe they know what's their limits, you know, and I can just tell myself, okay, when you get older, this traveling and this jet lags is kind of really getting to you.
Yeah, but here we're talking young guys.
Young guys, yeah. No, I remember the days that I was playing Olympiad. I was like 19, playing Olympiad in Philippines, and then I flew back to... After Olympics, I flew back to Amsterdam, and then just a few hours layover in Schiphol Airport, and going to Philadelphia.
Of course.
Yeah, and okay, you have no clue which day or what time it is.
What was that, a 16-hour difference or something?
I don't know, but it was just... and you recover so quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and... but it cannot be good. But I think the whole, especially for a tournament like Waggensee, to be able to survive this 2.5 weeks in Waggensee, you have to be really rested. And even then, after Waggensee, you need also serious time off.
Yeah.
Because you have no, you know, you keep on going in Waikanae because the adrenaline is pumping for your body for 2.5 weeks, which keeps you going.
Yeah.
And then basically after 2 months you collapse and you should have, let's say, at least 2 weeks off.
Yeah, I mean, even if you're young and very fit, then it affects you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But is that the dilemma that they face? Because, I mean, they didn't accept these invitations for nothing because they thought, okay, I want to be there, the money is good. How are you going to resist that? You need some strong people around you to tell you that. And even then, you know, you don't know what they want.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, but let's say some decisions, I think we've spoken about it before, for example, the Cookers played the Grand Swiss in Samarkand. That was kind of ridiculous, you know. I understand that he loves to play, which that's very nice of him, but I don't think it's doing him any good.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. There's a question about, you know, the money that's being offered, you can make. However, you also have to see the big picture and what's it going to bring you in long run.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it means that, let's say, you you're going to lose many points here, and then because that's what you're out of the, let's say, Grand Chess Tour or whatever, then what? Then in the long run, you made a bad decision.
Mm-hmm. What should your priorities be? I mean, it's difficult to choose sometimes.
Yeah, well, okay, of course, it depends who you are and what is your ambition, and you have to be realistic. But let's say, for example, if you talk about let's say the Indian guys like Gukesh, Prahananda, Irigaishi. I mean, of course, they should aim for the highest.
Mm-hmm.
So they're playing for a world title.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so they should be more careful about their schedule and be more picky.
Yeah. Because we've seen this incredible rise of Indian chess, and they are very high in the world rankings. If we look at the standings now, then Gukesh, he's on 50%, Pragnananda, he's on -1, Irigaishi -2. That it must hurt.
Yeah. Well, I think for Irigaishi, I think he came here because he had already 2 rough years in Waikanae, and I think he wanted to prove something.
Mm.
And he had a good start, but then Waikanae got him.
Yeah.
So now he's on -2.
Yeah.
And Gukesh and Prahananda normally playing for the title here, which, it's also not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, Prahananda, he simply started very badly, and Gukesh was simply, he had some awful games, you know, big blunder against Abdusatov, and the way he lost to Bluebaum, if I would say it, White was a, let's say, 2200 player, you'd say, well, that's pretty high.
Yeah.
So that's not...
So that's you. Do you suggest that it's a mental thing then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you could also say, Vincent Kaimer yesterday he was saying like, okay, I played the game against Jordan as a 1500, and then you play another game, you play well. I mean, there's these enormous swings. Although I also think that Jordan played that game very well. I mean, he used his chances very well. But these are all mental things, you would say.
Well, I mean, I have to say that Vincent, I think he downplayed a bit. He should not downplay the level of Jordan. showed in that game, because Jorn played really well that game and completely crushed the guy.
Yeah.
And it made him look like a 1500 player, maybe. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's not really fair for the nice game Jorn actually played.
Well, in his defense, I should say he was mainly criticizing himself.
I think it's a combination of him making some dubious decisions and Jorn punishing.
It was also very clever opening preparation.
And you know, Jorn put him in under some kind of pressure, and then opponents like Vincent, they make mistakes. But talking about Vincent, well, I cannot say that his play here is very stable, to say the least. He's playing interesting chess, but like what they say in poker, I mean, he's playing like a loose cannon. So I think he lost to Abdusatov, and he had one more loss that I think, that he was playing way too aggressive, you know? I like aggression, but I like also a bit more controlled aggression. And with him, it looked like totally uncontrolled aggression. And this, I'm not a psychologist, but this could, for me, it means that, okay, this guy is not mentally stable for whatever reason.
Well, I think that it's easy to see several reasons. He had a absolutely fantastic year, but he didn't qualify for the candidates. And then I think he in particular, he had this crazy travel schedule with going to South Africa and then going back to Doha. I don't know. I mean, he was flying all over the place, and he has to find a balance at the start of this year. Is what am I aiming for? I mean, he wants to find his footing back. At the same time, he's probably thinking about Weissenhaus, because he senses that he has a chance to be freestyle world champion. So all these things maybe make it difficult to get all your priorities in exactly the right place.
Well, maybe that could be a theory. I mean, let's say if you are in the candidates, then you might be distracted by that. Okay, I have to play the candidates, you know, and then it might be a little bit more complicated, you know, because you think like, okay, maybe candidates is, if you're honest, maybe a bit more important for you than to win what I can say, because if you can play for the world title is. So the fact that he's not playing candidates should make his life actually more simple. So he's like 27, 70 or 80 or whatever. So you think, okay, almost 2800, so you can belong to this elite club.
Yeah, but that is looking at it very clinically, because obviously there is still this wound of not being there.
I think this wound is will be felt once the candidate actually is taking place.
Okay.
Because then, I should have been there. Instead, I think he's now playing the Grenke freestyle event in Baden-Baden, or in Karlsruhe. So I think for him, and okay, I don't know, you know, this, to be honest, it's nice to have this freestyle tournament in Weissenhaus, but you think they really care about the, I think there's one guy who really cares about this world title, and he's not here.
It also comes with a price, you know, you can make some good money there.
I think the guys simply will they will go there, and I'm not sure that, I mean, the last year the freestyle chess tour was kind of nice, but now it has been announced that there will be this one more event and that's it. So I'm not sure that even guys like Naka, he didn't accept his invitation and decided just to focus on candidates.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. At DGT, we want to bring people together and help them grow through play by supporting chess and creating innovative, high-quality products for players everywhere. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl.
Well, let's say someone else who has had uneven results here is Anish Giri, who has made it to the candidates and probably isn't worrying too much about the mistakes he's making here, because on the other hand he's also he beat Gukesh and Abusatorov in really nice games. How do you see his tournament?
Well, I don't agree with you that, because you know, I think the level of play Ani showed at the beginning of the tournament, it should have worried him really a lot. Basically, in my opinion, he could have started with 0 out of 4. And I think he started 1 out of 4. And this level of play, I think knowing Ani, it really is killing his confidence. And he knows that the way he has been playing. So last year, I think Anish, I'm pretty sure if Anish had this crazy game in first round against Gukesh that he lost.
Last year.
And I'm pretty sure that if he had won that game, he would have won Wijkenzee. But he didn't play particularly badly that game, but just in time trouble, something went wrong. Can happen. But you know, then how's Anish then? He first wants to stabilize. He said that not more bad things are going to happen. And then slowly he's getting back in the tournament. So here, the situation was much more severe compared to last year, because his level of play was really bad. So he started so badly, and then he kind of stabilized, and then suddenly he won these two games back to back with black against both Abusatorov and Gukesh. So that was kind of
sweet.
And then you see, okay, then Anish gets his confidence back, and then what? Then he starts to play like crazy against Bluebaum. Because he's treating Bluebaum with totally contempt, like the guy is total putzer, and then and then he got butchered badly.
Well, let's talk about the people who are at the top of the standing. So Abusatorov, he's leading now with 6.5 points from 10, and then there's three guys: Sindarov, Van Forest, and Bluebaum, who you just mentioned, who, to the surprise of many people, qualified for the candidates. And well, many people would say, well, we don't think his chances are very high there, and he's in second place here, and he's won some nice games. So is he playing better because he has this confidence from qualifying for the candidates? How does it work?
Not necessarily, but because, you know, after he qualified for candidates, there was this European Team Championship, for example, where he didn't do particularly well. And I think also that he was in the World Cup. This is the fact that I don't even recall if you were in a World Cup or not. Then it also means something. So but I think, he's not, in my opinion, let's say when I played him in the European team and I lost to him, but he's not that kind of guy that really, that scares me a lot. But I think people have been way too negative about him. Mm. And here he has been showing really nice play.
Yeah.
And actually, he could have gotten many more points. He had a nice position against Sindorov that he lost. I think he was totally winning against Irigaray that he drew. And yeah, he has been playing ball. So that's, yeah, I mean, and I like his play very much here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it has anything to do with him being a candidate in game, but I think that's not the way he plays.
Yeah.
I think the fact that he won the European Championship, I think twice,
yeah,
it also means something.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is simply, he can play well.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, but he has been, let's say, very positive element mm-hmm. in this tournament.
Yeah. Which probably the Dutch will say Jordan van Foreest has been a very positive element. He's also among the people who are in second place, half a point behind Ondřej Satorov. He's lost one game against Erdemusch. We will speak about him later, and won some nice games.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I'm a bit biased, and I'm a big fan of Jordan. Yeah. As long as he doesn't do anything really stupid, which he tends to do from time to time, but so far he has refrained from doing so.
Yeah.
The game that actually he lost to the young Turkish Yagis, that probably wasn't even necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But okay. But
it was well played by
I mean, so Jordan beat, it was important for him, of course, to beat Anish.
Mm-hmm.
That's always, some prestige at stake and, some bragging rights at stake. Although, within the Dutch team, we're kind of good, there's still some rivalry and, that's always nice to... I know even from Max, who's not a real rival of Anish, but he wanted to finish higher than him in the World Blitz Championship, after he beat him, that's...
Of course, they should have that wish.
Good, I mean, like I had back in the days with Timon and Piquet, getting at each other, so that's good.
Yes.
And, Jordan's playing style is, he's just a guy who's always pushing, and so far he makes a very good impression on me in this event. But okay, it's still, he has a few tough games to...
Absolutely, yeah.
So...
Yeah, I think the next one is against... Is he playing up to Satorov? Or?
Yeah, could be, yeah.
Yeah. So... then we have the two Uzbek grandmasters, Abdusatorov, who's leading, and Sindarov, Yavukir Sindarov, the young, well, the slightly younger Uzbek star, very much feels like it's his moment to break through, right? He's also qualified for the candidates, contrary to Abdusatorov, who definitely would have, been a great name to be there, but he didn't make it. So how good are they?
Yes, that this guy Sindorov, actually I wanted to select him also for the Global Chess League. And I was hoping that other teams would be sleeping on him, so that I could get him for a good price, but unfortunately it didn't happen. And then I had
We should remind the listeners that you are the captain of a team, and you collect players from a pool.
Yeah,
and there's a certain value.
Yeah, I'm drafting players and with point system, but my points are not unlimited. So if I, for example, would have drafted Sindorov, probably I would not get Sugina. And the Chinese number two.
Yeah, who you very much wanted to have.
Yeah. So that was. I spoke a little bit with Levon Aronian about Sindorov because, it was like this they played this freestyle in South Africa and asking, you know, so this, what do you think about the Cinder of your alley? He's very, yeah, that. He has a high opinion about about Sindorov, and but having said that, I can also see he has something also typical is for Jordan van Verrees, that sometimes he is not controlling himself, you know, and because of that he's playing too much from emotion, and because of that he is wasting points. And I think he could have even done better.
But maybe that way of playing also brings you points, right?
It definitely brings you points, but you have to find the right, you know, balance, you know, when you play, when you put the pressure on your opponent and when you have to slow down.
Yeah.
And that, okay, it probably takes years to know.
Yeah.
But it's clearly that Sindorov, he made a lot, he improved a lot. And I like also the way he's playing and cannot say anything bad about him, basically.
No, no. Well, the youngster that has attracted a lot of attention here is Yas Erdoğmuş from Turkey. He's 14 years old and he's already been called a unique talent even by Magnus Carlsen. He did very well in the Grand Swiss, and yesterday he played against Gukesh, and had he drawn that game, which would not have been a very abnormal result, and he would also be in shared second place. How sensational is he?
Well, of course he's extremely sensational when with this age and this level of play. What surprised me most is actually the mature way of playing, and maybe he's playing more mature than, let's say, Sindorov or Jordan van Verrees. So it also means that he's playing a bit less aggressive than them, more controlled, which actually kind of surprised me for a 14-year-old that he can play like that. I don't know who taught him this. And even though if someone tells you, you know, how to play, of course, for example, you know, I'm doing some training with Elina Rubers. And, you know, then this tournament, she's playing the challenges and she is now currently 1 out of 10. So, and, you know, she won the European Blitz and she took the bronze at the World Blitz. And I told, you know, okay, when you play YKZ, it's going to be completely different time control, different opponents. And and you have to adjust your play, and which is extremely hard for her.
Because she has a very outspoken style.
And this style is very effective. Against especially in blitz, because these kind of opponents, compared to when you play, let's say, the more classical way, Yagis, he's, well, in this sense, very mature and very stable player. Although you can see from his body language, he's very nervous and very emotional after something goes wrong.
Yeah, he moves back and forth, and there's a lot of movement there. Is it too much? I mean, I can imagine that as an opponent, you'd say, could you please stop?
It's not that the opponent should say that. The arbiter is also there. I mean, what's the job of the arbiter? Is just to make sure there's no, let's say, hindrance.
Actually, I asked one of the arbiters, and he says, "Well, I can only do something if the opponent complains." And I thought, is that really so?
Yeah, no, that's ridiculous. Because simply they, if they see something, I mean, that's not. I won't say that they are like the police or something, but if something is something illegal. Or is happening, I mean, they have to intervene.
Yeah, where do you draw the line? If somebody empties two buckets of water over his opponent, and the opponent says nothing. I mean, would it be okay? I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, that's really a stupid way of how they think about their job, you know?
Yeah. So, but he was quite amazed. I mean, I think yesterday when he sat down to play Gukesh, I'm absolutely convinced he was thinking of winning that and going for a tournament victory, because he had just had a run of 3.5 from 4. He beat Jordan in this night's game. He beat Eric Geisy. He beat Van Nguyen. And he made a draw, I think, against Prague. And then he sits down against Gukesh. And, well, apparently there was a moment where he could have gotten a huge advantage, but which was very difficult to see. But when he was losing, it was also touching that, I mean, he's so mature. And suddenly he was 14 years old and he was crying at the board.
Yeah, let's say his play is mature, but his behavior is not.
Uh-huh.
So, and well, let's say when he's crying at the board, you know, they think, oh boy, you ain't seen nothing yet. You think this is the worst that which can happen to you? Well, there's
losing against the world champion.
There's still some things that, you know. That,
did you have that kind of growing pains when you were a very talented young player? And
well, I remember just that one game that I played against Magnus and he and Wyk and Zee, and basically after that game, you know, the dynamic between me and Magnus changed. I mean, on football field it was still the same, but on chessboard it went from that on, it went in the wrong direction, because I had sort of a good grip on Magnus. And that game, whatever reason, he decided to play Volga again. And if you look at my score, it's like huge.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm just killing the guy. And the guy has no time. And it's like one move before time control. The guy was in horrible time trouble. And I'm like plus 7. And in 2 moves, I go from plus 7 to 0 to minus 5.
All right.
And I lose that game.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm totally flabbergasted, you know, how is this could have happened, you know? And well, let's say from inside, of course you're crying. Or you know, sometimes you're crying inside, or you're furious.
But then you were much older.
But
it doesn't matter. You mean it's not a matter of age, or
no? Never had this. I never, let's say, if I cry, I cry silently.
Yeah.
So.
Not, but also when you were a junior player.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just bite your lip and. Okay, but at the same time, it was also a bit touching to see that there was still some very young age in him. He's working with Shahram Yarov, who you know well, and with Safarli, also from Azerbaijan. I mean, so his support is considerable. He could have worse trainers, I guess. How serious should we take him?
Yeah, well, I think if you compare him, let's say, with Magnus. I think that's a fair comparison. I believe it could be kind of similar. So if you in hindsight, if you take Magnus seriously, then you might also take Yagis seriously.
Yeah, but I think that already at a young age, Magnus was pretty stable. He was in these emotional things, he was quite mature. Well, okay, there were tournaments where he also cried. I mean, it happened, and I don't think that's something weird. But I'm just thinking about all this moving at the board. I mean, what does it say about his maturity? But we will see. Of course, we shouldn't put a 14-year-old under such a magnifying glass and give him a chance to develop.
No, I think it's what interests me most is that whatever he's doing behind the board, how much does it hinder your opponent? Mm-hmm. Because that's
and whether it's on purpose or, yeah. or things like that.
Yeah, and, yeah. That, and this is more about fair play.
Yeah,
and but okay, that's another question. Yeah, mm-hmm. because you know, I've had many opponents. They and you know that this is the problem with the arbiters. They have basically no clue what's mm-hmm. going on. You know,
about small psychological warfare.
Yeah, and, yeah, mm-hmm. and because they didn't play on high level. Mm-hmm. So and it's always the same thing that when it's your move. Hmm. Your opponent has, you know, some health problems with his throat or whatever, you know, a table is shaking. And when it's their move,
yeah.
it's always quiet, yeah.
yeah
so
yeah.
and
yeah.
and obviously they're just sitting there and doing nothing and
yeah.
and it's actually their job to make sure the play is fair, which
yeah.
is
oh, it's difficult. It's difficult, yeah. yeah.
It's difficult, but if it's too difficult, then don't take the job, I would say.
yeah, there's something to be said for that as well. Well, we were talking about this amazing junior, Jaas Erdikmus. There's an amazing veteran in the challenges, the always popular Vasil Ivanchuk. With Vasil, I very often have the idea that and I've seen it throughout his career, that there's always certain players that he picks in a tournament. I mean, either he's playing for first place, or if he thinks that maybe that is not possible, then at least I'm going to focus fully on this or that person. Mm-hmm. And here you have this, I mean, it's a personal feeling. I just want to know what you think, that he picks out certain youngsters that have been praised to the skies, and he clearly derives joy from beating them.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's possible. I mean, now I wasn't not really paying attention to that, but yeah. For example, if you talk about his game with Woodward, that he basically just crushed the kids, you know.
Yeah. I mean, who was leading at that point? So that was yesterday. Woodward is he's this very talented young American and. He's playing Ivanchuk, and Ivanchuk beats him, so now Woodward is in second place.
But I would say that, it's hard to say anything about Ivanchuk, because he, for example, he had this game with Aaron Lamy, and Aaron Lamy, he was 0-3, and then he plays black with Ivanchuk, and Aaron decided to play something speculative, you know, and but Ivanchuk, mentally he's completely lost control. Some games he is playing basically instantly, and against Aaron Lamy he played instantly, and although you know Aaron did so, and where it was a typical game that okay. You have to think a bit, you know, and then to make a few precise moves and then kill the game.
Yeah.
But Ivanchuk, he just, I mean, he couldn't control himself anymore and played the whole game basically instantly.
Yeah.
And he paid the price for that.
Yeah, and I advise everyone to have a look at that position. It is a point where most people would take back automatically, where it's Erwin's move, and he doesn't take back to the rook, and he pushes his pawn, and suddenly Ivanchuk is dead lost. It's a very instructive moment in the game. But you think that was because Ivanchuk was losing the thread all through the game?
Well, I think he was mentally totally out of control, and then he also had a game with the Indian qualifier was playing the challenge. What's his name? Panesar, yeah. And he played also just so quickly, and he was just dead lost. And that's also kind of amazing. And then
is it nerves?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And next game, then he plays with Woodward. He plays very well.
Yeah.
I mean, how is possible that there's such a big change?
Yeah.
One day he's playing well, then,
yeah.
and well,
hmm. But and you could see how happy he was with that game, because he has this smile.
Yeah. And then maybe he didn't consider Panesar as a let's call it a worthy opponent, and then he just plays just like that, and he should have been punished for that. He got away with a draw, but
You love chess. Why don't you try New in Chess? With readers in 116 countries, New in Chess is the premier chess magazine in the world. What will you get? Exciting chess games explained by the best experts in a clear and accessible way. On-the-spot reports of the biggest events. Top-notch instruction. Independent journalism. Chess history that comes to life. And great interviews. New in Chess, the way you want it. The beautifully produced paper edition or the digital edition for phone, tablet or PC. Give it a try. Go to our website, newinchess.com/magazine, for more information about subscriptions and special offers.
But it will be very interesting because, let's say, in the challenges, there is Suleimanli, that's the young Azeri talent. He's, he's seen as their big hope in Azerbaijan. He's leading, and then half a point behind is Andy Woodward still from America, and Maurizi, Marc-André Maurizi from France, and then Ivanchuk at 1 point. So, pretty unpredictable, I would say.
Well, you know, but before tournament, because, you know, I was, preparing with Max for tournament, and he said, okay, actually, who could be the main challengers, you know, to win the group, yeah?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I think Suleimani or Woodward, because, I mean, they're Suleimani, because his playing style is kind of solid, and he has the way to go through the tournament, you know, easily. And Woodward, because he's young, and I have good opinion about his chess. We also discussed Maurizi, but I thought, of course, you know, Maurizi, he was also in my team in the Global Chess League, and he has a very aggressive playing style, but that kind of gambling style. And I was worried for Maurizi that at some point he would run out of steam, because this his way of playing needs a lot of energy. So Woodward and Suleimani is not a surprise. And Ivanchuk, well, I thought he would not last that long in.
It will be tough for him these. But it's Suleimanli. Last year I was speaking to the brother of Fuga Gashimov, who came here, and he was talking about the promise of Suleimanli and also the support he was getting in Azerbaijan. And of course, that is a traditional chess country, where if you're getting real support, that means something. So, but will be interesting to see.
But I wouldn't. I still don't see Suleimani, to be honest, to reach the level of Mamedyarov. So
that's a diff. But okay, Mamedyarov, he was exceptionally gifted, right?
Yeah, of course.
Not your average talent.
I need to put a tag to the guy. So
You're right. I was asking for it.
So
then we have the Masters, where especially with all these swings in level, it is pretty unpredictable.
You still don't want to discuss Abdusatov, yeah?
Yes, that's where I was going. Abdusatov, okay, he had this loss against Anish, but for the rest, stable. And I mean, if I don't bet, but if somebody forced me to bet, I would bet on Abdusatov. And I don't know you.
Well, I bet me more than you, but I didn't make any bets here. But I like Abdusatov because he's. I can see, you know, he's full of energy, he's very fit, you know, plays very aggressive, chess, you know. This is also what I kind of like, you know. Yeah. And I like this guy. Mm. He's but okay. Also want to remind you that 1 year that Jordan beat in the last round in Wijkenzee.
Yeah, I was thinking about that.
Yeah, so yeah.
That's, you remind the listeners. I mean, it was the year that Jordan gave Anish a helping hand. By beating Abdusatorov.
Beating Abdusatorov black in the last round.
So you would say that tomorrow Jordan against Abdusatorov is a key game?
Well, of course they all are. But yeah, it's one to look forward to. Yeah,
yeah.
But okay, still three rounds. Yeah, for Abdusatorov it's maybe. If he wins that game, then he's very close. If Jordan wins, he's still.
Yeah.
Jordan, I think Jordan will be white. So.
Yeah. But okay, there's. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Well, there's 6 players within a 1-point margin. We haven't mentioned Hans Niemann yet. I mean, he had a very good start in the tournament, but now he's 1 point behind. What's happening with Hans? How do you see?
I'm not that close to Hans
to tell everything.
And I haven't actually seen him around at all. But okay.
He seems to be angry all the time.
Angry, yeah?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's... he looks at the entire world in an angry manner.
Yeah, okay.
And, maybe that's why he has this big fan base for people they like that.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, bad boys always have, big fan base.
Yeah, so how... what do you think about his chess potential? Of course, he's had this dream to be world champion one day and probably still has that dream. How much progress do you still see in Hans Niemann?
Let's say if I have to put my money on either Hans or Yagis, I put money on Yagis.
Okay.
Yeah, so he better be fast.
Yeah, whatever currency.
Yeah. So, and I don't know, you know, sometimes I see the games of Hans and sometimes there's such a big difference between his games. Sometimes they are really great games, sometimes they're really bad.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But maybe I should ask Magnus. he knows more what's going on, because I don't know.
No. And you always have this idea that with, his love for hotel life, that he lives a very exhausting life. I think if you're moving around so much, what role do you think that plays? He's in this permanent fight with the world.
Yeah, but that's one thing. But I don't know how he can cope with everything. You know, let's say all this traveling, all this playing, and how you spend time to study and to work on your chess. I don't know.
Yeah, at some point you have to just take a step back and recharge and everything.
Let's say we talk about the physics, you know, and I think then. He's doing things that I consider to be physically impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm pretty fit.
Yeah.
And also back in the days when I was 20 or 25 or whatever, I was very fit. Yeah. And,
I remember some idiotic challenges that you know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. No, but it's true. It played a big role in your career. But you've become wiser, and I think actually the most clever player in Wijkenzee this year is Luc Van Wely, because he might regain his third place in the Dutch rankings by just sitting out. And letting Erwin Lamy lose some points.
Yeah.
Was that the plan, Luke?
Well, it's not personally against Aaron, because I kind of like the guy. Yeah. But it's true that once, if you manage to keep your level, you just wait for other guys to fly by, and you know, because if I look at, let's say, my generation, or maybe they're a bit older, let's say you look at the guys like Ivanchuk, Shirov, Adams, Gelfand, you know, and which I consider them to be, let's say, chess-wise, I mean, they had higher peaks and they maybe they were better chess players. Maybe not just maybe, but but now we have more or less the same ratings, or they are going below. And well, I think also it's about let's say your shape, your physical shape, that makes a difference.
And that's also why you limit the number of games that you play to
Yeah, okay. To mostly, you also have to pick your battles. And if I play guys who are in the same situation as me, let's say same age, same family situation, then, well, then I don't have a natural enemy.
And but I think after last year's performance by Erwin in the challenges and the way he's still working on chess, I was expecting quite a bit from him this year, and okay, he has a disappointing result. You see any explanation there, or it's just one of those things that happen?
I think, to be honest, you're a bit too much result orientated.
Yeah.
And if you really be critical and look at his games, you know, Erwin is a great fighter, but let's say his games, well, they were kind
last
of...
Last year.
They were not very good.
Yeah, but he still came close to winning the tournament.
But he got away with it.
Okay, okay.
And now he doesn't get away with that.
Yeah.
But okay, now he's on minus two. He won two games. But unfortunately, he has to play Max tomorrow. So he's going to be back in the hole.
Oh, your guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's tough. Well, for sure. I mean, I hope Erwin will do well in the last rounds. But that's just personal.
Well, you know that. Okay, we all have kind of, you know. For example, now Max has to play Erwin, and okay, we all kind of good, you know.
Yeah.
But, okay, but this is nothing personal. This is just
of course not.
Yeah, and there's in what I can say, mercy doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And last round, for example, Max has to play Elina. And of course, Elina, we have 1 out of 10. She's a clear target.
But on a good day, she can be very dangerous.
Ask Yufa. And also, okay, she also had a winning position against Maurizi. And I mean, she's dangerous, but
No, definitely. And okay, even if Erwin doesn't recover from this one, I will remember that that one little nice move against Ivanchuk that everyone should have a look at.
Very nice.
It must have been a pleasure to play that move.
And you know that you you say, oh yeah, look, you know, you're number three in Holland. But but I was actually happy that for Erwin that he beat Ivanchuk. So
why was that? Why was that?
Yeah, sometimes you should give
you
something
your
back.
Battles.
I mean, it keeps you friends.
No, I think we have three great rounds to look forward to, and I mean, some performances may have been uneven here, but we've seen a lot of entertaining chess and. I think there's good reason to expect some more in the final weekend.
Yeah, but in general, you can say that in Wijkenzee always some things happen which cannot be explained, you know. And then also that there's no Wijkenzee mercy doesn't exist.
It's I mean. There's so many people that we didn't speak about, but let's say I'm just looking at the standings and I see Vladimir Fedoseev, who played some very interesting games. I mean, the way he beat Kaimer was fantastic. Everyone I recommend to look at is Rook C3 against Irigaray. That kind of moves.
Yeah.
That that makes chess so beautiful. So if we didn't speak about Fedoseyev, at least look at Rook C3 against Erigaisi. And on that beautiful note, I think we are going to end this conversation. Look, or unless there is something that you very much would like to add.
Don't provoke me, Dirk Jan, because then we add another hour to this podcast. But I think we are good for now, yeah.
Okay, we are good for now. Well, thank you very much, Luke, and lots of fun and success in the final rounds.
You mean success to keep my third place, yeah?
Secretly, I mean, I'm totally torn there because I want Erwin to do well, but I also I would not object to you being number three again. So
yeah, I was, you know, just on the final note, I was kind of, you know, teasing Erwin and Max. Yeah. Now we're talking about the national team. I said, now okay, now we have the big three, Anish, Jordan, and myself. Who else we should take?
Yeah. No, that's. That's luxury to have that choice. So thank you, Luke. Much appreciated as always, and good luck. And thank you for listening to this episode of the New in Chess podcast. The New in Chess podcast can be listened to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the New in Chess website. To leave a comment, go to our socials or email us directly at podcast@newinchess.com. If this podcast has gotten you in the mood to read a fine chess book or to subscribe to the wonderful New in Chess magazine, then please have a look at our shop on our website, newinchess.com, where you can treat yourself to a great chess read. We thank our sponsors at DGT for their support and hope to have you back next week for a new episode of the New in Chess podcast.